Looking out from a pebble shore to the sea where a lone swimmer sides through the water.
To say, as a man, I've been raped is hard. It's a hard thing. There's just an element of shame in it. I'm a man, I should be strong, you know? Makes you feel so vulnerable. And then when I thought about doing the interview, some people, their first reaction was, oh, you're not going to show your face. And then I sort of said to me, oh, well, that's the point. Because I'm not ashamed of myself, I'm not. And if we're going to talk about it, we'll talk about it.
Over a map of Manchester, images of clubbers dancing.
So many men have their lives shattered.
There were all young guys who had been on a night out.
This is an absolutely unprecedented case.
He's believed to have ordered men to his flat in Manchester.
He took advantage of living in the city centre, amongst the nightclubs and bars.
He also filmed what he did to them.
How can anybody do it that many times without anybody being aware?
He's been the most prolific rapist probably anywhere in the world.
In 2017, Greater Manchester Police began investigating the biggest rape case in British legal history. The evidence revealed hundreds of victims of sexual violence and one perpetrator catching a predator. 2nd of June 2017, 5:30 a.m. Central Manchester.
Police emergency.
During the night last night, I think some guy took me to his house. I didn't want to. I think he slipped me something. I don't know. He sat me in his house for most of the night. And then he raped me, attempted to rape me. Cars on a road.
Where are you now?
Montana House, Princess Street. Yes. I know it's violent, but I've had to hit him a few times just to stop him from attacking me. 2nd of June 2017 at 7 a.m. D.I. Matt Gregory.
I started work at 7 o'clock that morning. We came into a handover from the night before. A male had been on a night out. They'd gone back to someone's flat and had passed out. And when they awoke, they believed they were just about to be the victim of a rape. They tried to leave the flat, and the occupant had tried to stop him leaving. They'd had to quite seriously assault that person to leave the flat. So when officers came in that morning, they found the occupant of the flat barely conscious, in a pool of blood, with suspected facial fractures, and he was going to be taken to hospital. And the person who had initially made the call to us was arrested for assault. The circumstances were conflicted. On one hand, you had a report of someone saying that they'd be about to become the victim of a rape, whereas at the same time, there was another person with quite significant injuries in hospital. I went straight to the scene.
Through an open door, bloodstains spattered on flooring.
To the left of the hallway was the bedroom. There was a bed in there, as well as what looked like a mattress and a sort of dirty bedding on the floor.
More red stains on the carpet.
I rang a Manchester Royal Infirmary to get an update on the occupant's condition. They told me that he'd been asking quite a lot about his phone. He'd said that it was under his bed. We actually located this mobile phone. The next day, on the Saturday, I went to Manchester Royal Infirmary. I asked him for the PIN number. And it was at that point that he actually makes an attempt to take the phone from me, offered to put the PIN number in themselves. and actually being at the bedside, I suppose, didn't give him any other option than to give me the correct passcode, which did unlock the device. He actually made several attempts to take the phone from my hand. That leads me to sort of take the opportunity there and then to have a look at the place on the phone where I think there was most likely to be something of evidential value, which was the photos app. The last three thumbnails were videos. I watched about 5 seconds of the very last one, and that showed the bedroom at Montana House that I'd been in the previous day. It showed a male who was generally clothed, but had his trousers pulled down to around his ankles. Another male entered the frame and approached the male on the floor, and I recognised that as the person in front of me. It showed that the account of the person who'd called us was completely true, and that we had the offender in front of us. Subsequently, my colleague went back onto the ward and arrested the male for rape. He then said, "I'm a terrible person." That was his reaction.
The Manchester cityscape, then cell doors along a corridor in Long Sightley Station.
Right, we'll start off then. Just say your full name and date of birth for me, please.
My name is Reinhard Sinaga, 19th February 1983.
Okay. My name's Lata MacDonald, I'm one of the detectives.
Some days I come in work and I still can't believe what people are capable of. I've seen the worst that people can do to people and it still shocks me.
Do you prefer to be called Reinhard, Ray?
I don't mind, really.
OK.
Reinhard Tanaga was an Indonesian student. He's come from quite a wealthy background. Lived in Manchester for around 10 years. Physically, he's not a big man. He is slight.
The questions we ask, you can choose to answer them or not. That's entirely up to yourself.
I understand.
So our first interview is everything, really, for us. I fully expected a no-comment interview, and that was what I was waiting for. But obviously, that didn't happen.
Just to remind you that you are under caution for an offence of rape. What can you tell me in relation to that offence?
I deny delegation of the rape.
OK. Tell me how you've come into contact with this person.
I met him next to a car park. He seemed to be a very nice guy. We talk music as well. I talk about Oasis. But then he said, "Why don't we go to yours?" So when we were inside, we had drinks. He touched me, and I thought, I know some guys, they look straight, but they are gays, or they might be one to be curious. Then he put his hands on my thigh, and because we both drunk, we just fell onto the floor. We did sex, and which I thought he was awake, or at least in the same state as mine. And I thought maybe I should record this to make me feel sensual. But at some point he woke up. I mean, in terms of, I'm saying he woke up, and suddenly he just pulling back, and suddenly he just wanted to go home. Saw my phone, he thought it was his, so he grabbed it. So I tried to grab from him. He pulled me to the bed. He kicked me on the face, he pushed me to the floor. He gave his hand in here. And I couldn't breathe. I told him, "I couldn't breathe, please, I couldn't breathe."
People don't usually admit to rape. And I came out of the interview feeling that he wanted people to feel sorry for him, that he'd actually been the victim. But I'd already seen the videos.
Blurred footage on a screen.
And I was aware that certain things that he said, the victim contradicted. he wasn't telling the truth.
From photos of Sinaga to city buildings reflected in a car wing mirror, DC Dorothy Orr is at the steering wheel.
I joined GMP in 1980, so I was 16. I'd never really thought about being a detective. It was never really my thing until they were setting up the Serious Sexual Offences Unit, and it was something that I'd always had an interest in. So I became a detective to go into the rape unit.
In the office, she walks to her desk.
When I came in on a Monday morning, the investigation had started. We submitted his phone for a forensic investigation. So we had to wait for the phone to be analysed before we could even start looking at exactly how much was on that phone. Police officers had managed to do a search of Sinaga's flat, and they'd brought quite a large number of items in from the scene. It became quite evident that there was quite a lot of driving licences and passports that didn't belong to the defendant. So things didn't seem quite right. In fact, the first victim, his driving licence was found in Sinaga's wallet, which was in the hallway. And it's like a power thing, isn't it? Trophies, because that's a memory of that incident. But it was the fact that there were so many of them. Right from the start, it was a whole different situation than anything that I'd ever been dealt with before. But we were up against time. There's custody time limits that come into play. We had just 24 hours. So the priority at that point is to get the evidence for that one offence.
5th of June 2017, 1:55 p.m, Reinhard Sinaga's second police interview.
When you were arrested, I think when you said to the officers that you were a terrible person, I think you do believe that you are a terrible person, because you know he did not consent to sex with you.
No, that's not what I was thinking. I was just thinking he had this poor opinion about me, so I feel terrible.
He describes that after his last shot, which was a clear substance, he doesn't remember anything. The next thing he remembers is you on top of him, naked. And I believe that you gave him something to put him into that state. Because of the videos that we'd seen, because of how the victim was so heavily sedated, we guessed that he had used something to render them totally and utterly unconscious so that he could do what he wanted with them.
No, I don't want any substances.
Because what I can't understand is how an 18-year-old boy suddenly is in a state where he cannot recall things and he passes out. You've not told me the truth, and this video will undermine everything that you've told me today.
Show me. Can I see that?
Do you remember taking this footage?
Yeah? You were so awake. You were so awake that time. So now he's changed his position.
He's not changed his position. You've changed the position by doing what you're doing to him.
No, he moved.
You turned him.
No, I did not. I did not.
Yeah?
He was awake. I'm 100% sure.
He was lying, and his tears towards the end, and I don't think it was because of what he saw in front of him. I think it was just another tactic to try and make out that, again, that he was the victim that people didn't believe. Unless you've met Reinhard Sinaga, you won't realise the level of manipulation that he has. Why are you crying?
Because you don't believe me.
I don't believe you, Reinhard, no. I don't believe that he was awake at that stage.
He was awake.
Why does he not reciprocate? Why does he not stroke your leg? Why does he not kiss you? Why does he not gyrate into you at that point?
He didn't know what to do.
Just leaned on down.
He didn't know what to do, did he? He's 16 years younger than you.
The victim, he didn't realise what had gone on. He was only aware of an attempt rape. It was only when we'd uncovered the videos that we'd realised that actually we believe that he'd been raped at least three times during the course of that evening.
To Sinaga.
I can't even begin to tell you how devastated this 18-year-old boy is that I have had to tell him what you have done to him, because he didn't even know that this had been filmed.
Bullshit.
Bullshit. More blurred footage on a screen.
Coming out of that interview, it was quite clear that we'd just unearthed something that was going to mushroom and grow.
Light through bars in a cell door, 5th of June 2017. Reinhard Sinaga's charged with one count of rape and remanded in custody. DC Dorothy Orr at her computer.
We had quite a vast amount of stuff coming from the flat. We had cameras. We had memory cards. We had a large quantity of different mobile phones. We had laptops, hard drives, all the bottles that were seized. They all have to be examined. Where do you start?
Photographs pinned to a police evidence board.
Now, it's only when you look back that we realised there was an investigation already in our office with a lad who had reported a rape that had taken place in the April before Sinaga was arrested. Fortunately, one of my colleagues had started an investigation.
DS Kimberly Hames-Evans.
The other investigation was only 8 weeks old. Very, very rare do we get male victims reporting rape. I mean, so rare that this was probably my first investigation.
She steps into a lift at the police station.
The lad that reported it had a really confused account of what he thought had happened. He'd been out with friends in a bar watching a band on Princess Street. It's like the heartland of students, really. And that he then woke up in a place that he was unfamiliar with, but couldn't give any detail about how he's gone from one place to the other. It was just sort of like a blackout, and had been getting these flashbacks, these confused sort of flashbacks of being anally penetrated.
After dark, the city lights, then DS Hames-Evans sitting at a computer in the police station.
We'd seized clothing from him, so I'd submitted some items for forensic examination. I just remember being told that we've fast-tracked the forensics for yours because we've got this guy, Sinaga. It's happened in very similar area, similar circumstances, and a male victim as well that's reporting pretty much the same thing happening to him. And we think that it's him. We're just waiting for forensics to come back to confirm. It comes back as an email from them. And it was a match to Sinaga. So his DNA, and it was in the inner section of my victim's underwear. So it was absolutely 100% he was responsible. We now knew actually that yes, we've got two confirmed victims, but we knew very early on that it was much bigger than that.
The city under a twilight sky, then light glowing through a red curtain at a window.
It was probably a day or two when we got the download back of the phone that we'd got the evidence from for that first case. And an officer from our team, she was trying to go through and work out what we were actually dealing with. And I remember having the conversation with her in the kitchen. And we'd gone in the kitchen and she'd said, there must be at least 5 or 10 different people that I can see. That was huge, because I'd never dealt with anything where you had one defendant and, you know, you got evidence of maybe 5. different victims all on one phone.
Investigation day 4, 16 confirmed victims. DS Hames Evans.
The content was actually horrendous. There were videos upon videos of young men being sexually abused and raped. Working in the sexual offences unit, you get lots of reports of rapes, but seldom do you ever actually see one happen in front of your own eyes. You're always trying to figure out whether it did happen or whether it didn't. In this case, it definitely did happen, and we were watching them all play out in front of us as well.
DS McDonald.
And that's when the investigation team had to grow.
Senior Investigating Officer, DCI, Zahir Ali.
With each passing week, we were finding more and more evidence. There was over 3 terabytes of data on all these devices. That initially didn't mean anything to me, so I had to ask our techie team, what is that equivalent to, and what's all this? 1 terabyte is the equivalent of 250,000 photographs and, I believe, about 250 DVDs. Started off in 2007 using an old Nokia. So all we had was photographs and really short videos where the pixelation wasn't great. Then 2014 is where he buys his first iPhone. And from there, the number of recordings increases.
Photos of Sinaga.
Before 2014, the number of victims was probably about 20, 15 a year. From there onwards, it was 60 plus every year.
The cityscape.
In 2017, he was arrested in June. Once we got to about 125 victims, it was like, yeah, we are going to be looking at 200 here, whether that's just from videos and images alone.
Blurred footage, then the detectives at their computers.
There were so many of them. As it was going on and the numbers were going up, it becomes that point of, when is there going to be an end to this? How can anybody do it that many times without anybody being aware and, you know, and getting away with that?
On a screen, a list of numbers with unknown male beside them.
He didn't just video, he liked to take pictures of them so that some of them there'd be tons and tons of images, even to the point where he would be taking selfies with them when they're unconscious next to him in his bed. My colleagues and I are all working in a unit where we're used to dealing with female victims of rape predominantly. We've then all of a sudden found ourselves on this investigation where we've got one male offender and multiple male rape victims, so it was extraordinary. And we knew it was one of a kind because of the sheer numbers involved in it.
The Manchester skyline, investigation day 22, 83 confirmed victims. DS Hames Evans is driving along.
We travelled the length and breadth of the country to see people, even overseas, and that was probably the single most difficult thing about the case, because we're not usually the bearers of that kind of bad news, because when victims report, they're the ones that are telling us about that bad news. It's never usually the other way around.
DC Dorothy Orr at the wheel of a car.
The videos are only a snapshot of a certain amount of time, so we didn't really have very much information as to how these people had ended up in his flat. And the question was, how did a physically slight man like Sinaga get so many men into that vulnerable position?
DC Orr steps out of the car into a residential street. DS Hames Evans.
They were really keen to see me really quickly. They wanted to get something off the chest. It's like we had, provoked something.
A train, then a high-rise apartment block.
The majority of them were students, just kind of starting out in life. Some were more mature and were already working, already sort of settled.
Most of them were straight, but there were some who were gay.
And what struck me was that they were all able to recall this particular night, albeit not a specific offence or being offended against, because, the terminology that we'd use, well, it was just a bit weird, it was just a bit strange. It all seems to get to a certain point where they recall speaking to a guy and they've ended up back in a flat. And then there's a blackout. And a lot of them did describe it as a blackout. And then the next memory is waking up the next day.
So it was a matter of giving them little bits of information and see if they have any memory. And it was at that point, maybe at the point of saying his name, that they would go, I remember this man who was really nice to me, looked after me, I was drunk and he took me in and things like that. And at that point, you sit there and you're going to tell them what somebody has done to you, that somebody has raped them. Now, chances are their life is not going to be the same again, ever. Ever, ever, ever. And you do have to think, would I want to know? Are you better off not knowing? Are you better off just, going through the rest of your life not knowing? But you have to know. You've a right to know.
D.S. MacDonald bites a lip and swallows. D.S. Hames Evans.
They just went very quiet. And you just kind of see the colour drain from the face. Like, no kind of obvious reaction, but just a very sort of dour, like, oh my God, look on the face. And you just... And I knew, like, giving them that information that I've just ruined this person's life. And you could see it.
She swallows, then nods slightly, looking pensive. Lisa Waters of St Mary's Sexual Assault Referral Centre.
What normally happens within a police investigation is that the police will go out and speak to the victim, and then they will refer in to us for support. But the feedback that we'd had from GMP officers was that it was a really difficult thing to do, to go and talk to these men. We wrestled really with how we could support people right from the very beginning, because we did recognise that this was different from any other case. So we asked our crisis workers to accompany the detectives when they went out to see the men. That was a big change. The focus was about the best outcome for the men. It was really imperative the victim had the support that they needed.
In Hastings, the pier extending from the beach into the sea. Daniel.
I was born in London. I moved to Hastings when I was 15 or 16. I didn't like it. After moving from London, where I was growing up and coming to terms with being gay, people weren't as accepting.
The seafront.
A couple of years after that, I met a guy in Gran Canaria. He's from Manchester, so he already knew somewhere that we could move straight into. And Manchester's just buzzing. It was new, it was different. When everyone finishes work, everyone goes out. I felt like it was a mini London. Yeah, I loved it. For my birthday, we went to my favourite restaurant and we had a great night. We were having really good food, good cocktails, and we were drinking a lot. We drank a lot. We went back to one of my friend's houses and carried on drinking and having party games, and it was just good fun. And then we left. We were waiting for a taxi and I needed to go to the toilet, so I just sort of went up an alleyway. And that's it. Like, I don't remember anything after that.
After dark, railings along a pavement, then CCTV footage of a man running along a road under street lighting.
As the investigation progressed, we realised that he was a stalker. He lived right where he could see what was going on. He could probably even see from his apartment window the waifs and strays in the area. and he would just go prowling the streets, looking for his victims.
Revelers in a club.
Young guys who had been on a night out in Manchester city centre with friends. They'd become separated somehow, maybe ejected from a nightclub because they were too drunk, or they'd gone outside for a smoke. The point at which then, obviously, Sanaga makes his move, picks them off.
CCTV footage of a man strolling along a road after dark. DS Natalie McDonald.
I cannot imagine anybody ever meeting him who would have the idea he was a threat. He's polite, he comes across as quite sensitive, and he's a student. He is another student.
Sanaga had been a student since 2007. He's taken a number of degrees. He'd done his master's and he was studying for a PhD at the time that he was arrested. But he was funded by very wealthy parents, and I actually think he would have probably been an eternal student.
A busy city street after dark.
As a person, he's got quite a, this is probably going to sound strange, but a friendly nature. He used that to his advantage to manipulate and lure them back into his apartment. Hey man, come and get a taxi from mine, it's cold. Or come and charge your phone up at mine and ring a taxi. Come and eat your food at mine, you're in a bad way, let me help you out.
A lighted window in a dark street. Daniel.
I was on a couch when I woke up, fully dressed. I just sort of opened my eyes and I felt groggy. I didn't feel right. But I thought, this is like a hangover and you don't know what's happened. I just laid there for 5 or 10 minutes trying to piece it together. Could not remember anything. And then I saw someone's feet just walking around, and I just froze and just thought, oh God, who's this? And what am I going to wake up to? And just pretend to be asleep. And then they left the room, and I just grabbed, like, just got up and ran out the door. And I just had this dread, you know, like, what's going to happen? What is my fella going to say? Like, how did I go missing? None of it made sense. The whole taxi ride home, I was nervous, I just didn't know. And then, I got home and he said, where have you been? And like, I've been calling the hospitals and worried sick, and what happened? How did you just go? Like, obviously he accused me of, well, where have you been? Who have you been with? And I knew I hadn't done anything like that. I knew that wasn't in me, but I couldn't explain where I'd been. And I did say, I feel like, not right. I feel like I might have had some drugs, like someone might have given me something. And of course, then he was a little bit more concerned, but really, first and foremost, he was angry.
Did you ever think about reporting it to the police?
No, not at all. I didn't even think like that because I was doubting myself. I just felt stupid. I didn't have a clue, like, what had happened.
Daniel on the Hastings seafront outside a row of beach huts.
I know from speaking to some of the victims that they actually gave reason for why they didn't pick up the phone to the police, even though they had considered it. And some had said to me, well, you know, what do I actually say? Oh, I've been on a night out, I've had a blackout and I can't remember. Which is really interesting because with females, we get lots and lots of reports of, you know, I think something bad's happened to me, but I've ended up going back with a guy, I've had a blackout, and I'd like to investigate it. But men, not so.
The lighted windows of city trains running through the dark reflected in the canal below. Daniel.
When the police turned up, I could see the way she looked at me, that she recognised me.
Shaven-headed, bearded Daniel buries his face in both his hands, wipes away tears, then sits upright again.
You okay?
Yeah. So, yeah, she just... I knew she knew. And when I saw her face, that was it, and I just knew. And then it all went from there. And they showed me photographs and...
He takes a deep breath, struggling to find the words.
Sorry.
Do you want to stop?
No. All right. They showed me one of my arm. I was laying on my arm. And you could see my tattoo here. There was, like, no denying it. This is the way it... Because one of the photos, I said, no, I don't think that's me, you know? And then I looked again and... it's just horrible to see yourself that vulnerable on photos that someone else has taken and, you know, and you can see, like, I'm comatose. Like, it's horrible to see. I look dead, like... You know, there's a bit of relief because, you know, what's happened finally and what you can make sense of it, but probably not the relief you want, you know? Yeah.
He breaks down again, then sits up, wiping tears from his eyes.
I so wish it wouldn't have happened.
From a seagull flying over Hastings Pebble Shore to Manchester City Centre in daylight, investigation day 58, 112 confirmed victims. Lisa Waters.
The trauma that the men experienced wasn't necessarily the sexual assault, because they couldn't remember that. It was being visited by the police and being told what had happened to them, and also being told that there's video footage of you being assaulted, and that was really difficult for people to accept. As time went on, the needs of the men became more and more apparent. Then we would arrange for an appropriate referral to the team of independent sexual violence advisors. They were there for every step of the way, through ups and downs, assessing mental health, addressing every need practically and emotionally. And some men had never spoken about this to anybody else. So it was really important that we listened to them.
Daniel outside the row of beach huts looking out to sea. A date for a trial against Reinhard Sinniger is set, 1st of June 2018. DS Hames Evans.
Going to court and giving evidence is not a nice experience for anybody. And so there was no pressure put on them to do anything. You know, it was their choice. But the vast majority were supportive of an investigation and a prosecution.
She watches footage of a man walking down a flight of stairs. Ian Simkin, barrister for the Crown Prosecution Service.
Honestly, I was excited because it was a good job. It's not a great part of being a lawyer that does crime, that when bad things happen, you tend to think, that's a good brief. Because I'm afraid that's my job, isn't it, to prosecute people who've raped people. There was a lot of drawing the curtains in the living room at my house and making sure that nobody from outside could see in while I watched videos of people being raped for hour after hour. What we had was a narrative which had been captured on film. So there was the kind of side profile where, you know, he would film himself raping the victims. And then there was close-up shots as well. One man who had no memory of it was violently raped, so was held down during the rape, tried to struggle free, and was held down by the defendant, who was savage, I thought. At one point, it was pretty clear that the defendant had two men at the flat, and he would go from raping one and go back and rape the other over a lengthy period of time, in hours and hours and hours. But that is... it's like a gothic horror story. Worse, really. He had to be convicted for what he'd done. I cared about the result. You know, I did care. I knew what I had to prove, and I knew he wouldn't plead guilty. People don't plead guilty. Very rarely do they plead guilty.
DS Natalie McDonald seated at an office desk watching footage on a computer screen.
When you're looking at the videos, you're not necessarily watching the act itself. You're looking for the evidence. Is that person moving? You know, is the signs of them saying something back? Are they consenting? Are they not consenting? But the difficulty we had was we didn't necessarily have their facial shot or a full face. It was a huge, huge task.
Colleagues in front of screens.
But Tsunaga was a trophy taker. He would commit his offence, and whilst they were in the flat, he would search them out on their Facebook, take photographs from their Facebook accounts, and store personal photographs of that person. It might be on their holidays, it might be out with friends, it might be with their girlfriends, family, or whatever. So his Facebook profiles and photographs, in a horrible, morbid way, catalogued everything. Then we would look within his chats, and he liked to boast. He liked to talk to his friends about his, not actual offences, but to him, relationships.
A message Super Ray saves boys from girlfriends.
Tsunaga is very egotistical, and he was showing off to his friends. Like, oh, you know, look, Manchester's great, all these guys, and they want me. One of my colleagues, she'd set up like a spreadsheet, if you like, and was just matching dates of videos to text messages and the Facebook screenshots, names of people on those Facebook screen grabs to any of the personal belongings that he'd kept, and then correlated the dates of those screenshots with the videos to establish exactly what offences had been committed. And we were doing that day in and day out for weeks on end.
It's difficult. It is difficult. And it does take a toll to see the enormity of it. Sorry. Oh, my goodness.
DS McDonald's lips quiver. She takes a deep breath.
I think because I have sons of the same age, and you become quite aware of the helplessness of them in that situation. And they're all somebody's family, aren't they? All sons of, sorry about Ukraine. So some of them were horrific. And I mean horrific. When somebody can take advantage of somebody when they are physically ill, they are vomiting and they are shouting, even though they're not aware they're shouting, it is hideous. By the time I'd been on the job for a number of weeks, I can't say it got easier, but I knew what to expect. I knew what was coming up. You become not used to it. I think the only way I know I'm human is that every now and again I would watch another one and it would still shock me.
Investigation, day 365, 183 confirmed victims. Film of Sinaga during a police interview.
What did you give him to drink or eat whilst he was in your company?
No comment.
What other drug, aside from alcohol, did you give?
No comment.
When he realised what we knew, he then changed his tune and said nothing. Just didn't answer any of the questions.
Sinaga leans back in his chair in the interview room.
He was so unaffected by the fact that he was arrested, unaffected by the absolute chaos and damage that he'd caused to so many people.
You've got an opportunity now to talk to us, to take some of the weight off your shoulders.
No comment.
He smooths back his hair.
There was never a doubt in our minds he was guilty. We have to prove it. My role was to make sure that Tsunaga was convicted for absolutely every single offence we could charge him with.
Reinhard Sinniger is charged with 159 counts of rape and other sexual offences, the largest number against a single defendant in British criminal history. 48 victims agree to give evidence in court. Due to the unprecedented number of victims, the case is spread across four trials. Reinhard Sinniger pleads not guilty to every charge.
There was a blanket ban on reporting until the fourth trial. The police called me in for a meeting. They said, "We do want this reporting, but it's going to be like a long haul. As journalists, we've got like a healthy sense of competition, and you're pleased that you're the first one to kind of know about this case." I've heard lots of very difficult things in courtrooms before, but I've never really heard anything like this. His defence is that they all agreed to have sex with him. They all agreed to come up to the flat. They all agreed to lie entirely still, not making any sound, because that was his fantasy. And he mentioned 50 Shades of Grey, which was really strange, as if it was some kind of underground thing. He would say, "Just because it's not normal to you doesn't mean that it doesn't happen behind closed doors."
Manchester Evening News reporter Beth Abbott, DS Hames Evans.
You don't know what juries are going to do. You just cannot call. And in sex cases as well, we know that the conviction rates are low, they're poor. Are they going to buy into his defence?
Ian Simkin.
What worried me was aspects of the evidence could be perceived as a weakness by the jury. All of the men said they didn't remember, not some of them, all of them. So there was a problem with that. Nobody complained. Surely some of them must have known about it. Why did nobody know about it? There's a predisposition towards thinking if people don't behave in a certain way, then they're less likely to be believed, which I'm always shocked by. And I've done serious rape cases where I've thought the evidence has been overwhelming and the defendant was nevertheless acquitted. So you're in the lap of the gods.
The defence got up to cross-examine our witness, and it was put to them that they'd gone back consensually and that they had engaged in sexual acts, and it was a shock for them. And to watch them, some became quite angry, some became upset, some became frustrated. It was a really difficult watch, because she just wanted to be able to say to them, we don't believe that happened, it's just an account. But the jury are listening to that, and it's a matter of who do they believe.
The courtroom.
Don't think you can underestimate the impact that a trial can have on people. Some men wanted the day in court and really wanted to be heard. And there were some men who were really quite anxious about it and wanted every bit of support they could have. It was a case of having them all prepared as much as you can, making sure they have options about how to give the evidence. And it's not one day goes by where we don't think or surprised by the strength and the tenacity of people who come forward.
A sculpted eagle, Ian Simkin.
We knew we had to prove consent was missing. These men, they'd been drugged and raped over, some of them 14 hours they were kept there. We strongly suspected, believed it to be GHB. The clear, tasteless, colourless liquid that if you put it in strong alcohol in particular, you wouldn't know it was there. And it's, within 15 minutes, pretty fast acting. Rendered them immobile.
Was any physical evidence of it found in the flat?
No.
DS MacDonald looks pensive.
When it's something like GHB, the only way you're going to know specifically if somebody is drugged is if they are able to give a sample at a time very close to the offence having been committed or the drug being given them. And the drug, from what I can gather, is out of the system You're talking within about 8 hours, and it's gone.
Manchester City Centre Crown Court entrance.
Because there was no toxicology, couldn't prove it, which makes it all the more pressurised, of course.
Through a window, the cityscape dotted with leafy green trees. As the trials against Reinhard Sinniger progress, police continue to process evidence. DS Hames Evans.
There were some mobile phones that had been recovered from Sinaga's flat that had been submitted for examination and had probably been laid dormant for a period of time whilst we were focusing on other bits and pieces with the case. And there were two quite long audio recordings within the report, so I thought, you know, what are them?
She dons headphones and listens to a recording.
Have you read the Manchester report? How do you find it sometimes?
All of a sudden, you can hear talking, and I quickly realised that this is Sinaga talking to another guy.
I am a student. I study geography. So your uni brought me to Manchester.
And I listened all the way through to the end, and it was amazing because within a short time frame, you hear the demise of this other guy. He goes from speaking like I am now, having a sort of normal conversation, to being out of it. But it was the sinister actions of Sinaga and how he, as it goes along, is like firing loads of questions at the victim to test, almost to test, like, how alert are they?
How do you find your lecturer? You want to lay down on? You okay? You help me?
I remember his voice and everything, like, hey man, you okay? You okay, man? And he knows that they're not okay because he's just given them something to make them not okay. Because he's offending right there at that point.
You can put your hat in here if you want to lay down. He's beautiful.
That audio recording, it wasn't what it said, it's what it didn't say, which was important. There was no mention of any sex, no mention of, you know, I'm bi-curious, I've never been with a man. Nothing like that was said. And so it put the lie, didn't it, to the notion of what the defendant was saying.
Through a window, a sign reads Court 5, a sculpted stone face.
When the jury foreman stands up to give that verdict, I could have physically been sick because the thought that he's going to say, or she's going to say, not guilty, was just unthinkable.
Beth Abbott.
There was a lot of nervous-looking faces. You know, the clerk's running through every single charge and every single count, and they're coming in guilty, guilty, guilty.
The TV news.
The worst serial rapist in British criminal history has been jailed for life by a court in Manchester with a minimum term of 30 years. He was convicted of 159 offences against 48 victims.
And the judge said Sinaga would never be safe to be released.
This is a very evil man who should never be allowed out of prison.
Police say they think the true number of his victims approached 200.
Daniel nods slightly.
There's an awful lot of victims out there who have not come forward. And every one of those victims have family and girlfriends and friends and people it's affected. You can't imagine what impact Sinaga's had.
The city skyline under a glowing sky. Beth Abbott.
I know for a fact, from having spoken to people after this whole thing came out, people still can't quite understand how men could be victims of rape and how they could be in that vulnerable position. If you're a young woman and you're walking down the street at night on your own and there's a stranger behind you, you might think to yourself, is there a danger that I could be sexually assaulted or raped? But with men, you just
you kind of assume that something like that isn't going to happen, I think. And I think we do still have that assumption.
I hope it's raised awareness that men get raped. Men get raped. I've got four sons, and when they go to university, I now know I will be more worried than I was beforehand. My friends who've got daughters are always worried, aren't they, that something happens to their daughters. But you don't think about it for your sons. But I do now.
Do you still work on rape cases?
I do far fewer now. I don't really want to do them anymore, if I'm honest. I think it's because I've done too many of them. They are a graphic representation of the worst parts of human nature.
After a successful appeal by the Crown Prosecution Service and GMP, Reinhard Sinniger's sentence was extended from 30 years in prison to a minimum of 40 years. Daniel fishing with his father.
Oh, I had a bite then. I dealt with that touch then, boy.
Some people still, to me, say I'd rather have not known. But that's not me. The unknown was harder than knowing, even though what I know is horrible.
Wanna go?
I was nervous about telling my dad, just because I thought it would really break his heart. He's quite sensitive, even though he's a hard man. Men don't talk about male rape.
Oh, yeah.
But then his response was amazing. Really just beautiful.
If I'm going through something because of it, anything, I'll go and speak to him. He's the one I was offered counselling and I've had this, that and the other. But nothing's been as helpful as talking to my dad, to be honest.
Which is a form of counselling, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's still, sometimes you see him thinking about it, if we've been talking about it, and maybe take himself off and get himself together again. Yeah, very brave. Very brave. I'm very proud of him for how he's dealt with it. Yeah. I'm glad he involved us as well.
Father and son sit side by side holding their fishing rods over the tranquil lake. Within 3 days of Reinhard Sinniger's conviction being made public, the police received over 150 calls. A further 26 victims were identified. Officers believe at least 60 victims are yet to come forward. Greater Manchester Police are continuing to investigate allegations of rape and assault against Reinhard Sinniger and encourage everyone who thinks they may have been a victim to contact them.